It's I Am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Frank Appleton joins me now. He's considered the father of Canada's craft brewing movement, and he's just published a memoir, Brewing Revolution, Pioneering the Craft Beer Movement. It's a lively book that brings the English-trained brewmaster to British Columbia, where he works for one of the big three breweries in Canada, Carling O'Keefe, Molson, and Labatt's, where they produce bland, predictable beer. He also writes by 1982, he and John Mitchell launched the Horseshoe Bay Brewery. It's the first of its kind, and soon they're producing the iconic Bay Ale, which is brewed from Appleton's recipe. In the book, he looks at the challenges of establishing a cottage brewery, the difficulties dealing with BC's Liquor Control Board, as well as provides us with insight as to how breweries are designed and run. It's a fascinating read and made more interesting by the fact that I haven't had a beer in over 15 years, and when I did, I didn't care for it. I'll ask Mr. Appleton about whether I could take to beer, like I do scotch, brandy, gin, vodka, and whatever else I can get my hands on. Frank Appleton is a consultant brewmaster who has advised some 20 operations from design, starting up, and brewer training. In 2009, he received the Lifetime Achievement Award for Leadership in Craft Brewing from CAMRA Victoria Chapter.
It's called CAMRA.
CAMRA, pardon me. This new book is published by Harbor. Please welcome to the Planta Online program in Edgewood, B.C., Frank Appleton. Mr. Appleton, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being here. I'm glad that you called me. Yes.
It's a very enjoyable book, I must say, and you write with such style and verve that it made it all the more enjoyable.
Well, thank you very much.
My years
in the wilderness, my 9 years between working for the big boys and starting up Horseshoe Bay Brewery were occupied with freelance writing, so that's where I am, my credits in that.
You know, I had a guy in the office here the other day who wrote a history book, and it has to do with Vancouver in the early 70s, and we ended up talking after the interview about Tom Campbell, the former mayor of Vancouver, who you had a run-in with, I guess, or you wrote about.
Yes, Tom Terrific.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you want me to talk about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if we just started there, because I guess this is, you just come to Vancouver at this point, is that right?
No, I'd been around for a few years working for O'Keefe in Vancouver, but I also had been writing technical papers about brewing, which wasn't exactly encouraged by the company, because the company was dominated by lab guys from Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started writing other things, and one of the things that came to my attention was that Tom Campbell had, the recent courthouse fountain thing had been just opened, right?
Yeah, outside the arcade.
Right outside the old courthouse, and he was very proud of that. It had three fountains and so forth, and it was, he thought, designed for a nice recreational area for office workers on their lunch hour to sit there and enjoy the fountains. But it was also the time of the hippies, let's say, and also the American draft dodgers were arriving in Vancouver, and they were predominantly present at the courthouse fountain, which didn't impress Campbell at all. And he was a lawyer, and he dug through the dusty archives and found a law which dated back to the Second World War that allowed police to patrol government building areas, and if they found anybody of an undesirable or foreign nature, to tell them to move on. And if they didn't, they could be arrested and charged with vagrancy. And Tom decided to, he would reenact this law to move people with long hair and dubious lifestyles along. And it wasn't just me, it was in the papers, in Vancouver papers, but I picked up on it, and my article condemning his attitude was published in Saturday Night magazine in Toronto. So it went Canada-wide, and Tom Campbell was not impressed with that, and when he was interviewed on the radio, said he was going to sue me, which didn't impress my employers, when they found out it was me, that Frank Appleton in the lab in O'Keefe, written it. But I stuck to my guns there, and I said, hey, this guy is actually infringing the law himself. It's not a law, it's actually a bylaw, and it's ancient. And together with the Vancouver Sun and the writers in there, I said, you know, this is a travesty of the law. And so eventually what happened was nothing. He just backed down, and the whole the law that he had revived there was quietly shelved, and things went back to normal.
Yeah. You know, this speaks to the era, but also the... because you write in the book too about the liquor laws in BC and the challenges of a bygone era where it was hard to say, you know, sell booze or even set up a craft brewery at one point, right?
There was nothing about craft breweries. They just didn't exist. The big three existed.
Yeah,
and that was it. But the problem with getting the licensing, as I pointed out to John Mitchell when he came out here, the Kootenays, to ask me if I would help him in this project, having read an article that I talk about writing that had been published in Harrowsmith magazine called The Underground Brewmaster that I wrote. And John came along and I said, well, I can definitely design you a brewery to your do what you want and within your budget. Your problem, mate, is getting a license for it, because no such thing existed, and the regular licensing for big breweries was catered to them, and yours wouldn't qualify for that. And so that was a big thing, that when I was sitting back here waiting for... I wrote up the proposal for John when he came up here, and he took it back to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And gave it to the LCB in Vancouver and so forth, and they were giving it the hot potato treatment, you know, passing it from one bureaucrat to another.
Yeah.
Until Peter Heinemann, who had just been appointed Minister of Consumer and Corporate Affairs, and the whole LCB structure was shaken up and put under his charge. And so... what happened was that he had announced that the government was getting out of pricing the beer. Unbelievable, but true. Up to this point, all the beers and all liquor in BC was priced not by the manufacturers, but by the government.
Yeah.
And as I put in the book, well, as far as the beers were concerned, they all tasted the same, so why, yeah. You know, they could be just classified under the same thing. But Heinemann said, now we're getting out of the beer pricing business. We're going to let the price be set by the breweries, and we hope that this will bring some price competition into the beer marketplace. And so that was announced, and everybody sat back and waited to see what happened, what would happen with the big three. Nothing happened for 6 months, and then after that, the big three all put up their prices by exactly the same amount within 3 weeks of each other. Well, the press just had a field day with this. You know, this is price competition in the beer marketplace, is it? You know, no collusion here, folks. Move along. And so there was just this kind of uproar in the press about it, and Heinemann called a meeting of the big three representatives,
mm-hmm.
and outside his office waited a reporter, De Hoi Yin, I believe.
From the Sun,
who was the business reporter for, I'm not sure whether it was the Sun or the province, but anyway, mm-hmm. she was waiting there, and when the meeting was over, the big three boys came out and said, and she said, well, what happened in there? And their comment was, no comment, no comment, no comment. And that was it. And then Heinemann came out and she said, so what happened in there? And he said, well, I told them we were very disappointed by their reaction and expected some more competition. And if they didn't come up with a better program for beer pricing, they might find they're getting competition from someplace else. And she said, yes, but where? Which is a good question, because the big three were it, right?
Yeah.
They produced 90% of the beer. And he said, well, we've been thinking of allowing American beer into D.C., which had not been allowed before except during one strike in, I think it was 78.
Mm-hmm.
And and he said, and in addition, there's this group that have a pub in Horseshoe Bay, and they seem to be very responsible, and they have excellent background people working for them, and we are thinking of giving them a license to, they want to make their own beer and sell it in the pub, and we're thinking of creating a license for them. Well, when the story hit the papers, it was about, you know, three lines of the no comment from the big three, and the big story was pub in West Vancouver, Horseshoe Bay, going to make its own beer and sell it. And although he hadn't actually confirmed that, it was like a fait accompli. It was all over the papers, and when John Mitchell went next to the LCB, and so he said, well, I hear we're getting a license. Apparently so, Mr. Mitchell, yes, you have to go and see the minister in Victoria, and the whole thing just changed around just like that.
Yeah. Well, what do you think accounts for the success of craft breweries in British Columbia? Because we just have a surfeit of them. And, I mean, I guess up and down this coast, I mean, you go to Portland, you go to Seattle, I mean, craft beer is big. But yes. But BC in particular is special, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Well, it started here, yeah, with the Horseshoe Bay Brewery. That was the first one in Canada, and it's a toss-up between us and one down in California who also opened in the summer of 82, which was actually the first in North America. Why has this thing caught on so much? Well, it was an idea. It is an idea whose time has come. Mm-hmm. Because the reaction had to start really from the consumers getting dissatisfied with the plain old, same old, same old pale light lager that all the big three produced. And people like from England, like me and John Mitchell, had experienced a variety of different beers with different flavors, different appeals to different people. The English-style mild bitters, stouts, mm-hmm, strong ales, all of those things just didn't exist over here. Well, you could find some, I suppose, in the import category. But people actually, you know, they got brainwashed into thinking that beer was the stuff that the big three handed out with, you know, the pale light lager stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I was told when I started with O'Keefe. I was like, don't we make any dark beer? I mean, you know, a nice border. Well, Frank, you don't understand. People won't drink that stuff out here. Well, I wish I could talk to some of those people now.
Yeah. And so what's it like now when you have a variety of craft breweries? You have imported beer. You know, people drink American beer still. People drink, yes, beer from Asia, beer, yes, from England. Has beer consumption just gone up these last 40 years altogether?
The beer marketplace has been essentially flat, but the losers in this, let's put it the other way, the people, yeah, who have gained in this are the craft brewing segment,
mm,
and the people that are losing out are the big guys who are making the same old, because we have found that people do like craft beers, that they are interested in different beers, and my doctor said to me, you know, it's like this, Frank, that, you know, when you're invited out to dinner, you used to ask the person what kind of wine would they like, and now it's like, what kind of craft beer would they like, because there's such a variety, and that's a really big shift,
yeah,
in the perception of beer.
Yeah. What's the secret to a good recipe?
It's sort of like the same as a chef faces when, what's the secret in cooking good food? And it is this: start with the best possible ingredients, have a really good brewing plant, which is the kitchen for the brewer, and the best possible intentions. A brewer that is trained, has a background, to know the difference in recipes and how to concoct them and to see them through all the way through. You have to be microbiologically exact, let's say, or conscious of that and so forth, and give the product sufficient aging. In actual fact, it means quality considerations all the way through. And being proud of what you do, being proud of the product, just like a chef is proud of a meal he serves up when he knows that people are going to enjoy it.
I mean, these are qualities, cleanliness, obviously, patience. These are qualities that would serve one well in life as well, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. The process of getting it just right, I mean, again, that speaks to patience, doesn't it, and experience, I suppose.
It's patience and experience and getting the best possible ingredients. There's a lot of choices for malts and hops and yeast, and getting all of those blended together just right, and then having the patience to see the thing through correctly and aging it for the right amount of time. Don't cut corners on the aging because that affects the beer, and doing all of those things in a circumspect and quality manner.
So the qualities that you seek in a good brewmaster, because when we hear the title brewmaster, we don't think, well, I guess a lot of us think of it as just the manager of the plant, but it's more than that, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Well, I could say this, that you can teach most intelligent people to brew a batch of beer in a rote way, that is, studying the recipe, or following the recipe through, following the directions that have been laid down by previous brewers through, and so forth, and he can produce a successful beer. But if you want a person who knows the depth of knowledge that is entailed, which is knowledge of malts, biochemical knowledge of what's going into the mashing process, biochemical and microbiological knowledge of fermentation and aging, and also throw in some knowledge of things like stainless steel plant design and refrigeration and many, many things that go into the producing of good beer, then you have a brewmaster. It takes years.
Yeah. So when you come to Vancouver, as I'm sure you do from time to time, you go through some of these neighborhoods and you see these breweries opening up and you know, all this new equipment that they've got in there. It must be gratifying having...
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. When I started up the Horseshoe Bay Brewery there with John in 1982, and he started up and it was success right from the beginning there, I thought, well, that's fine. John's got his nice little brewery, and he's got his real ale, and people like it, and everything's doing well. But I always thought it would remain rather small. I thought, well, there'll be other ones opening up and stuff like that, but I always thought they'd be rather small, and I didn't see the explosion that has come about since. It's very gratifying, and it shows that, as I say, it was an idea whose time has come. People are dissatisfied with bland, pale lager that you would only drink to get a buzz on. I can't think why you would drink it otherwise.
Mm.
We're after colorful, flavorful, hoppy beers, different types of beer. I mean, a small brewer can make any type of beer, really, if he has the plan to do it and the initiative. And that's very rewarding. Oh, also, you have to mention the fact that John keep on pushing the liquor board and stuff like that and getting a license for it. The federal government had to also change its a license hiccup that were in the liquor laws. Well, that had to be changed too. And getting these changes cleared away meant, it opened the door for all the rest of them that were to follow, didn't it?
Yeah. What you're I guess you're not retired, are you?
Well, I'm 75 now. I should be, but I'm still getting calls.
Yeah. Yeah, and so people seek your advice. People want to know how it's done.
Yes.
We're in a right place, too, aren't we, here in British Columbia? I mean, one of the things you talk about in the book that's key to a brew pub and facilities is location, isn't it? And
yes.
We seem to have a good spot for it, don't we?
Yes, yes. Well, I wrote one chapter there called The Tale of Two Cities Brew Pubs about how one that I started up, which was Spinnaker's in Victoria, is a great success. And with an identical brewery, an identical brewing consultant, which was me, a fellow, Colin Noble, wanted to open one in his Travelodge Hotel in Winnipeg, and it was just a dismal failure. The people didn't like it. We had heck of a time there, and it's still the same way out in the prairies. It's a bit of a desert as far as real beer is concerned.
Yeah. The other thing that I was thinking about, and you dispel this notion in your book, if craft brewery is doing so well, why aren't the big three, say, or whoever they are now, why aren't they having success like craft brewers?
Well, they're doing their best. They're coming out with these flavored beers. You've probably seen Budweiser, and all the big three are trying this, that, and the other. But basically, these are the same old pale lager that have been flavored with something. It's not like making a craft beer brew from scratch. And the problem with the big guys is that they're too big. And, if a brewer or a brewmaster in a small craft brewery has an idea, let's say, hey, let's make a triple hopped Irish stout or something like that. Well, with a small batch size, you just go ahead and do it and then put it on the market and see how it goes. But if you're one of the mega breweries, that's unheard of. You can't do that because it costs tens of thousands of dollars to launch a new product.
Mm.
There's thousands that have to go into marketing and all of this kind of thing. And they would take a look at, they'd do their market research and take a look at how much triple hopped Irish stout would sell and find out, oh, it's ridiculously small. We can't take up our plant with that. Their market and what they do best is the plain, bland adjunct lager. I should say that also the difference between craft beer being made from 100% malted grains and back to the beginnings of mm-hmm. beer, that's not what the big guys do. Their beer is made from pale malt with a hefty addition, usually 40 or 50% of non-malt cereal, which is cornstarch, corn syrup, or rice. I mean, Budweiser even boasts of its rice on the label, for God's sake. You know. Come on. Beer should be made out of malted grains and malted barley and all of the derivatives that you can get from malted barley.
Yeah. Did you enjoy writing this book?
Oh, I did, yeah, definitely. It was something that had been knocking around in my mind for a long time. I've been writing for the magazines and so forth, and one of the people that encouraged me was my daughter-in-law, Jody, who said, hey, you have such great stories, you know, you should write those down. And after I came back from a beer thing in Victoria there a couple of years ago, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to sit down and write it. That's what I did.
Yeah, it's a very enjoyable book, as I said. I mean, I haven't developed a taste for it yet. But I really enjoyed these stories that you tell and just how you go about doing this stuff, because it is fascinating in and of itself.
Yes.
So the next time I'm at a restaurant or a pub and I want to start with beer all over again, is there something mm-hmm. you'd suggest?
Try it. Don't pin me down to endorsing one product or another, because there are so many good ones now.
Right.
That even I've lost count. And the thing is, rely on your own taste buds.
Yeah.
There's so many. You can go into into a brew pub or a craft beer establishment, and they'll, you know, they'll give you a flight. They call them a flight of sample beers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Small 5 ounces of all their products. And you take a, you know, start off with the lightest ones, because if you start with the darkest ones, that's going to sort of pollute your palate. So you start off with the lightest ones and taste those and see how those ones go down, and sniff the beer, smell the beer before you drink it. It's like wine. Not something you just quaff down and then give a verdict on it afterwards. Just treat it like wine and see how your taste buds respond, and then move on through the flight of beers through the different ones and see how you like them. And you'll find a rainbow variety of products, you know, rainbow variety of tastes, odors, and things like that that just don't exist in the mass light lager market, and then you'll find something that you like.
Indeed. Frank, it's been such a pleasure chatting today. Continue good luck with this book.
Well, I'm glad to be here with you.
The book is called Brewing Revolution, Pioneering the Craft Beer Movement. It's from Harbor Publishing. It's author Frank Appleton. Join me on the line from Edgewood, British Columbia in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.